And now may my words and all our thoughts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Amen. I wonder what makes you really angry. Perhaps it's people who don't do what they say, or perhaps it's injustice. There's a good chance that the things that make you angry are a clue to what you really care about. In today's gospel, we have a rare glimpse of Jesus' anger. There are many times, aren't there, in the gospels where people don't seem to understand what he's trying to say, and he responds with patience or with sadness. But here we see his wrath. And it's the religious establishment, it's its distortion of God's holiness and truth that anger him. These should have been the ones to recognise God, to lead people to him, rather than putting up barriers for them. So Jesus drives out those selling cattle and overturns the tables of the money changers, creating a bit of a scandal. Yet Jesus overturns more than the tables in the temple. His life and his death completely change the ways in which we understand God himself, or so Paul claims in today's epistle. It's not just this one incident, but the whole of Jesus' life and ministry that challenge us and overturn our expectations. Weakness is shown to be stronger than power and apparent strength. And this is the real scandal that the early church proclaims. This overall scandal of Jesus is perhaps harder to understand than the incident in the temple, but it's of central importance for us. Other leaders and teachers have been angered by society's distortion of the truth, even by the church's distortion of the truth. But none have claimed that their greatness lies in vulnerability and in weakness. Although Jesus' action in the temple was clearly one of the things that angered the authorities, and in some of the Gospels it's put just before his crucifixion, but not in John, what most got to them was not his anger, but his acts of compassion and inclusion. Jesus' way offended the good people in all kinds of ways. He taught, didn't he, that the poor people and even those who were sinful would get into God's kingdom ahead of the religious establishment. The religious leaders thought they were at the front of the queue, but Jesus overturned all that. He said that in worldly terms, it wasn't about being powerful or righteous, keeping the commandments, for example, never doing anyone any harm, but about service and extravagant, compassionate love. Life should not be about following rules and saving ourselves, but about taking risks for other people, even when they seem to fail. And even his followers can't handle his acceptance of those who are outcasts or lepers, and his insistence that he himself would die. His way of life is a stumbling block for many because it threatens the normal human way of understanding things. And his death, executed as a common criminal, is to be the final straw. Indeed, the ignominious death of God's prophet Jesus remains a stumbling block for Muslims who revere him as a prophet but cannot believe that he died this way. As Christians, we believe that this was not a tragic accident but the clue to his whole ministry, and that weakness, not strength, is the key to our own lives if we want to follow Jesus. It's this claim that's the real scandal or stumbling block which overturns the wisdom of the wise. So what does all that mean for us? Well, For all of us, there are things we're proud of, and other areas of life where perhaps there's pain or shame or sadness. One person perhaps has never been very confident. Another has a series of unsatisfactory relationships, or perhaps never found work that's satisfying, or where their worth has been recognised. Perhaps someone else experiences physical pain or disability. Humanly speaking, we try to cover up our faults and deficiencies or to hide them. We might try to make the most of things and ignore them. Some people, of course, do the opposite and make much of them, saying they've never been understood or that they're alone in their sufferings. But the gospel of Jesus is that our brokenness and our weakness can be used by God. Rather than being used to score points, if we can admit to our faults and areas of shame and sadness and offer them very humbly to God, they can become the key to our healing and to the healing of others, just as his own willingness to go to his death was the key to his whole ministry. And again, I think it's possible to see that in action in our own lives. When we stop pretending to be stronger or more sorted than we are, or even entering into competition over whose life is the hardest, we can begin a real sharing. It's our areas of brokenness that are used by God very often, not our successes or triumphs. It's the things that we've struggled with that become points of growth for us and can be used to help others. I've seen this recently in two ways. In one of our Lent groups, someone shared their difficulties with something. And in an area, in an article in the Church Times this week, two young men spoke openly about their infertility. And that offered a space for other young men to talk about this embarrassing issue, to find emotional healing. It's really hard, I think, to keep hold of, even when we've seen and experienced the way God works in our lives. Because again and again, we find ourselves tempted to seek to be successful or powerful, to hide our weakness, rather than being prepared to go out on a limb and make ourselves vulnerable for the sake of others. We're all afraid of looking foolish, of getting it wrong, of failure. So we build systems, we hide behind rules, just as the Jewish religious leaders did. And in doing so, we confuse other people rather than pointing them to God. It's no wonder Jesus was angry. So we have this example of Jesus being angry, because in the end, he knew that it wasn't criticism of the system, however justified, that would change things. But in the end, he did know that. Many leaders and prophets have taken religious leaders to task. In our own day, it's easy enough to be saddened, even maddened, by the faults in the system, secular or religious. And I'm afraid that as I grow older, I find it more and more tempting to think I know better than the people actually running things. And I suspect I'm not alone in that. The harder thing for Jesus, for us too, is to live in a different way altogether. To admit that we don't have all the answers, that we're as flawed as the next person, and are saved only by his mercy. So how can we help each other to really follow the way of Jesus? The answer, I think, lies right here in the Eucharist. Just as the bread is broken and shared, this is the place where it's possible to acknowledge and share our broken dreams and lives. Our church communities need to be places of honesty, where we learn to see God in each other's weaknesses, where we can encourage each other to take risks for what we believe. Like the temple in Jesus' day, our religion can sometimes be a barrier rather than a place where everyone can find God. is this really a place for me, people might ask, this church? Yet it need not be a barrier. At this table, the bread is broken, and our own brokenness becomes the source of life for ourselves and for others. We don't need to be clever or successful, just ready to acknowledge our need and open to receive God's power. And the very, very good news is that his love, his power, are just waiting to be poured out on us whenever we do that. Amen.